This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. John Hansen here. Excited to have you here. I'll be in for John all week long on Mondays for Your Money Matters, the show I host at 6 o'clock. We often do a little Mesero Monday. So when I found out I was in on a Monday here today, I thought I'd bring in our good friend Jennifer Gartenberg from Mesero. Jennifer, how are you doing today?
I'm great, John. Thanks for having me.
All eyes are on the Fed this week for, what will they do, what won't they do, which I know is an interesting debate for some people. But for the vast majority of us, Jennifer, half a point, quarter a point, doesn't really matter. It's more the trajectory change that this represents, right?
Exactly. So tomorrow, the Fed heads into their two-day meeting, and we will find out if they cut a quarter point or a half point. The market seems to be pricing in a half point, but we'll have to wait and see. A rate cut is a big deal because many hope that that would lower borrowing costs for companies, which would improve earnings, and hopefully overall economic growth would improve as well.
But what do I mean when clients call, or do they even call? Do people call you and be like, is it going to be a quarter? Is it going to be a half? What should it matter? Or what do you say to people when they call? Do they, first of all, that question, do people call about it?
Most do not call about whether it's going to be a quarter or a half point, but people are concerned about rates. If you're looking for a mortgage, you want rates to be lower. And if you buy bonds and you want to earn higher income, you want rates to be higher. So it really depends on your personal circumstances.
So people might be calling and wondering, well, I've had some money safely put away in like a treasury bill or something.
Right. Should
like
we lock it in now? Are rates going to go down if the Fed makes this decision? So call your advisor, see what makes sense for your situation. But for most people, this decision this week will not make a big difference to their overall plan.
Yeah, the quarter or the half percent, I guess it'll all add up to a certain amount at the end of it, right? And whether
exactly.
It happens in three stages, four stages, or whatever, we'll have to wait and see. The main reason I wanted to bring you here today was to talk about the cost of getting a little bit older. We get a lot of texts and calls from people just that are struggling with paying for the everyday things when they're a little bit older. Maybe their mom or dad is still living in their home, but they're having to pay for a nurse to take care of them 24/7. Boy, those costs are astronomical. This is a big conversation I bet you have with clients too, isn't it?
Absolutely. Regardless of people's financial situations, they're very concerned about the cost of care and healthcare in retirement.
I mean, because it can be the vast majority of what people spend money on at that age.
Yep, it's very sad. We see situations where people save their whole lives and that money is really just used for the last couple of years of care.
We're going to dive into it more in the next segment, but just broadly speaking, long-term care insurance, what is it?
Sure. So long-term care insurance is a private insurance you would get through an insurance broker, and it provides, you pay a premium, and it provides benefits for you to pay for either to be in a nursing home or to have care at home. And how much benefit you get depends on the policy and how much you want to pay to receive. But basically, if you have cognitive decline or you can't do certain activities of daily living, like feeding yourself, dressing, etc., this insurance would pay for you to either have care or be in a facility.
There's multiple different kinds, which I want to break into. But just broadly speaking, I imagine it's something that if you're younger and healthier, it costs less to buy. If you're a little bit older and have some issues, it costs more to buy. That's a general term, but I imagine that's true.
Absolutely. And it's a pretty stark contrast. So if you have health issues, it will be harder to get long-term care insurance and much more expensive. So if it's something that may be a fit for you, and we'll talk more about the benefits of it, I would encourage you to do it as young as possible and at your healthiest.
Okay. It's a Mesero Monday here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We got Jennifer Gartenberg, who joins us frequently on Your Money Matters from Mesero Wealth Management. Hello, Jennifer. We're continuing our chat about long-term care insurance, which is exactly what it sounds like, to care for you in those times when, you know, you may need it. And whether that's in a facility or a facility is probably a cold way to say it, a living situation that you have assisted living or whatever the case may be, or at home, that insurance can be distributed those ways. You, broadly speaking, say there's like two main types of it, right?
Sure. So there's standalone long-term care insurance where you pay an annual premium, and in exchange, you get some long-term care benefit when you need it. Those premiums can increase each year. And if you miss a year of the premium, just like any kind of insurance, the policy lapses. That's the traditional type of long-term care insurance. What's become more popular in recent years is kind of having a hybrid policy of long-term care insurance with traditional life insurance. So basically, if you never end up using long-term care insurance, lucky you, that means that there's still a death benefit that your heirs will get upon you passing.
So you don't get to use that money for something else yourself, but it's part of your estate then.
Exactly.
And it passes on.
Exactly. And if you end up using the long-term care policy or a portion of it, then the death benefit your heirs would get would be reduced. There's kind of a formula. So that's a nice option of someone who isn't sure if long-term care insurance is for them, or they worry about paying in year after year and then ultimately never using it and feeling like those premiums are for nothing.
Interesting. Yeah. It's like when you decide whether you want to use a 529 or not for your kids. You're like, well, what if they don't go to college? Well, they just fixed it and they could you could roll it into a Roth. Right.
Exactly.
So this is kind of like the exit thing that still that money gets used some way.
The other nice thing about those hybrid policies is often it's one large lump sum premium the first year. And so you don't have to worry about premiums going up each year and making this decision of whether the policy should stay in force or not.
Is that cheaper the younger you buy it?
Yes. And also it depends how much benefit you want. So you can look at getting certain amount of dollars per week or month. And if you just want a little bit of long-term care insurance versus a lot, that would be cheaper as well.
So there's just a lot of different options. It's like when you buy life insurance, whether it's a whole or a term policy, you kind of like cater it to what you think you might need. And then with this sort of option, that passes on as a death benefit, what's unused.
Right. And the benefits of long-term care insurance are, you know, a lot of people don't want to be a burden on their children or loved ones. They don't want the money that they work so hard their whole lives to go towards this. This is a way to safeguard your assets and most importantly, provide some peace of mind.
So yeah, it really depends. If you're someone that does have some cash on the sidelines that you want to use for something, a one-term lump sum for some people, that seems a lot better than quote-unquote death by a thousand cuts where you're paying a premium every month, especially if you don't know that if you never use it, that that's not going to go to anyone.
Yep, it's worth looking at the different scenarios.
Yeah, but on the flip side, some people don't have that lump sum exactly like that. HSAs are something that I have trumpeted for a long time. Having an HSA can be, in essence, your own designed long-term care insurance policy, sort of, right, Jennifer?
Sort of. So HSAs are great. HSA stands for Health Savings Account, and they are the only account I know of that have triple tax benefits.
Explain that.
So normally they're through your employer through payroll, but not always. You can do one on your own as well, as long as you have a high deductible health insurance plan. The triple tax benefits means that when you make a contribution to the account, you get a tax deduction in that year.
Off the bat.
Off the bat.
Okay.
Once the money is in the account, you can invest it in mutual funds, ETFs, depending on where the HSA is, maybe even individual stocks.
Mm-hmm.
And the growth in that account, whether you buy or sell things, income, et cetera, it's tax-free.
Whoa.
Which is huge. And then if the money is used for eligible expenses, you don't pay tax when the money comes out of the HSA either. So it's triple tax benefits. And the amount you can put into an HSA goes up each year. It's up to $8,300. Per year for a family or $4,150 for an individual. If you do that year after year, don't take the money out and let it grow and compound, it can be a very large pool to pull from in retirement.
Right. And it's sort of like a part, it isn't your emergency savings, but for a health-related crisis that might come along, it can at least give you that peace of mind knowing that you have this large and growing big HSA, right?
Right. What we encourage people to do at Mesirow, if they have the cash flow to pay for medical expenses on their own without using the HSA, we encourage them to do so. Let the HSA grow and compound, invest it smartly. And then if you track those medical expenses for many years down the line in 1, 5, 20 years, whenever it may be, you can reimburse yourself for all of those healthcare expenses later on. So pay for the expenses when you're working and you have cash flow, reimburse yourself in retirement. And it's really like having tax-free income.
I just want to make sure people understand that because that is one of the things that really got me onto an HSA. If you are able to pay for those visits you have with you or your kids, your spouse, you're paying the premium, whatever it may be, you save all those receipts And then that HSA, that contribution that you're making, don't use that to pay those if you're able to. And then in 20 years, you take all the receipts. Let's say it equals $30,000. You can tax-free pull that $30,000 out of your HSA.
Exactly.
It's huge.
And it's huge. And there's so many things that you can use an HSA for. So obviously things like copays, different things at the doctor, but also prescriptions, some over-the-counter meds. People don't know that. Physical therapy, eyeglasses. It's very, very generous what the government considers a healthcare expense for HSAs.
Yeah. And so much of us build emergency savings, or we hope to, and we want to. Part of that is for that medical rainy day. This can kind of, as I said earlier, act as a little bit of a safety net, even though ideally you'd be able to play for it out of pocket, but there it is for you. It's peace of mind.
Exactly, exactly.
And you can use it for long-term care stuff when that comes, right?
You can. You can even use it for Medicare premiums. Medicare is a whole nother subject, but you can use it to pay for Medicare premiums as well. So it's very flexible.
847 wanted to know, what if you don't use it for medical expenses? Just sit there and pass to your kids? I guess that's one option. Or can't you use it, but then you just pay the taxes on what you use to like buy a car or something?
Sure. So if you pass away and you still have an HSA, it has a beneficiary listed just like an IRA account does, which is what most people do. And then it becomes your heir's HSA to use however they would like. If you need the money for something non-medical related and you don't have prior medical expenses you can use to offset it legitimately, you could pay the tax and a very small penalty.
We've got to go, but not to put you on the spot. Is it just the receipts that needed to be reimbursed, or do you need like an invoice document or an explanation of benefits? Because we get a lot of different papers.
I think just general, it really only matters if you're audited, but I tell my clients just to keep an organized list and the receipts.
Keep it all. Throw it in a folder somewhere and make sure it's a safe that it wouldn't be damaged. All right, Jennifer Gartenberg, you opened our eyes to a lot of things. We appreciate your time, okay?
Thanks, John.
From Mesero, 1-877-MESERO, mesero.com. Jim Jahlke joins us now. He's the Director of Communications at Tech Nexus Venture Collaborative. Hello, Jim. How are you, my friend?
Hey, John. Doing great. Thanks so much for having me.
Love chatting through these tech stories. And I had heard about United Airlines offering free Wi-Fi. I didn't hear part two, that it's going to be with Elon Musk's Starlink. Can you explain first, for those that don't know, what Starlink is?
Yeah. So Starlink is a service from Elon Musk's SpaceX company that provides Wi-Fi based on a satellite system that it has. So it's got more than 6,000 orbiting satellites out there, and uses those satellites to bring Wi-Fi to different areas. And one market for them are airplanes. And so United has a big deal now where they're going to be working with Starlink to bring the Wi-Fi service to its planes starting next year. And passengers are going to be able to use this for free. I think in-flight Wi-Fi has been one of those kind of frustrating consumer experiences for a long time. We've had the ability to get online on an airplane for many years now. Actually, a Chicago company, Gogo, was really one of the pioneers of this service that was bringing Wi-Fi to airplanes really for the first time. But the experience of surfing the web, in many instances on airplanes, just has not been up to snuff. It has just not been up the quality of what you could do kind of on the ground. And, in the news here, the United says that you're going to be able to kind of bring that quality of on the ground, surfing on the web to the skies really for the first time pretty much anywhere in the world. So better connectivity, thanks to a partnership there between Elon Musk and United, is going to give travelers some better Wi-Fi in the skies.
I imagine for business folks, that is great news, or people that just need a little break. I will just say, as a personal aside, I don't always buy the Wi-Fi, but I either buy or I get to use the messaging where you can message people on the ground. As a nervous flyer, that is a godsend. There is something about still feeling connected to what's happening on Earth that makes me feel less nervous about what's happening in the sky. Jim, I don't know if you subscribe to that, but that's all I'm going to say about it.
Oh, totally agree. And I just think that's what these airlines are competing for in many instances, customer service, right? And so what United saw here is they had an opportunity to potentially charge for this, right? They certainly could have charged you $5.99, $6.99, whatever they wanted to charge. But they really are kind of, competing with these other airlines, for brand loyalty. And, they're kind of looking at customer experience, think that, hey, offering this for free is a better deal for customers in the end.
All right. That's good. Free Wi-Fi and a Jack and Club Soda, and I'm good for my flight. Okay. There's been this saga of Foxtrot. My goodness. For a store I had never, ever been in, I've heard about so much over the last 6 or 8 months. All closed down. It was a whole to-do. Now we're starting to see them open, and they're starting to maybe reopen rapidly here, Jim, right?
Yeah, you know, Foxtrot abruptly shut its business down in April, right? So this was a company that really was a Chicago startup story. This is a business that really began as kind of an online food and delivery app, food and beverage delivery app, and started launching these corner stores because they were great models for, you know, basically housing all of their inventory and getting them into the neighborhoods quickly. And then they thought, oh, what if we served coffee here? What if we served sandwiches here? What if we served wine here? And really grew quickly. They raised $100 million in venture capital back in 2022 and, you know, really had major aspirations to open, you know, 50 corner stores really throughout the country and gotten to over 30. And then, you know, they merged with Dom's Market and, late 2023. And then, you know, April came of this year and it's a really abrupt closure. The whole business shut down. And now the founder is really looking to kind of kickstart growth, especially here in Chicago. So they just reopened their first location in the Gold Coast earlier this month. They're opening a second location in Old Town later this month, potentially this week or next week, depending on if they can get the appropriate licenses. And so, you know, the founder said in an interview, last week, they've got 7 or 8 stores here in Chicago, another couple in Dallas. So Chicago and Dallas are going to be the two markets that they're focusing the most on. And, for folks who were, fans of Foxtrot, it was a big deal when the business shut down. You know, they had definitely a loyal following of folks who, you know, like to go there for their kind of community corner stores. You know, they're really looking, their business model was really kind of this corner store of the future, a really reinvented kind of, you know, corner store where neighborhood folks could gather and work and drink a coffee or grab a sandwich. And so it's great to see them kind of coming back online after a few months there of some real uncertainty.
For sure. Let's talk about the TechCrunch startup battlefield, which sounds super intense. And we got 5 Illinois-based companies to cheer for in what exactly, Jim?
Yeah, so TechCrunch is the sort of famed Silicon Valley tech blog publication that's been writing about startups for years and years and years. And during their TechCrunch Disrupt conference, which is a big annual conference that kind of highlights startups, they have this startup battlefield, which has been going on for the last 15 years or so. It's been described as the World Series of startup competitions. This is a competition that's helped, grow companies like Dropbox and GetAround and Discord. Some really major companies have kind of been birthed kind of within this competition and grown from it. And so, yeah, 5 Illinois companies are going to take part in this. One is ASL Aspire, which is a really interesting company. What they do is an educational platform that teaches STEM education for deaf students that are in K-12 and hard of hearing students. So kind of an interesting model there. We've got some AI startups. We've got some health tech startups. Interesting group of companies. Chicago Inno's got the whole rundown there. But hopefully Illinois and Chicago specifically will be well represented at a national startup competition here.
Go startups. Woo! We love that. Jim Dahlke from Tech Nexus Venture Collaborative, technexus.com. Jim, take care. Thanks as always.
Thanks, John.
All right. First, it's time for the Wintrust Business Minute. Here's Steve Krasanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Plans are in the works for a large condo development in Chicago's Fulton Market District. Cranes reports the development could include nearly 250 condo units spread across 3 high-rises in the 1300 block of West Fulton. Chicago City Council will consider a zoning application later this week. The plans by Sulo Development call for 3 towers, one at the corner of Fulton and Ada, another near Fulton and Elizabeth, and a third tower that would sit between the other two buildings. The tallest of the 3 towers would rise to 538 feet. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency claims ADM violated the Safe Drinking Water Act earlier this year when a carbon sequestration site leaked carbon dioxide into unauthorized zones. The site is located in downstate Decatur. According to Capital News Illinois, EPA alleges ADM failed to follow proper emergency response and remediation plans after the leak was identified. Carbon injection facility is one of the first projects of its kind in the U.S. It stores millions of tons of carbon dioxide generated by the ADM plant. ADM says the company is working with the EPA to address the issue. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
The Business of Food with Steve Alexander.
Thank you, and it's a big week for the men and women who put food on our tables.
The first National Farm Safety and Health Week was actually back in 1944. FDR signed the first one, and this is our one time a year that we can focus a bright light on that and, you know, talk about safety.
That's Dan Neenan, the director of NECAS, the National Education Center for Agriculture Safety, which is located in Iowa.
And the equipment is getting safer.
But the number one factor in farm accidents? Humans.
Absolutely. You know, the thing is a farmer wakes up in the morning and they've got 1,000 things that they'd like to get done during the day. And if the day goes really, really well, they might get 25, 30 of them done. So they're always in a hurry. And being in a hurry can sometimes be counterintuitive to being safe.
Each day this week has a special safety focus, and we will get to that after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDrivesChicago.com. Okay, agriculture is not only our most essential industry, it is our most dangerous, and
the number one cause of fatality and injuries are tractors.
NECAS, the National Education Center for Agriculture Safety, has webinars each day this week at NECAS.org.
Today is equipment and rural roadway safety. Tuesday is health and wellness. Wednesday is generations of farming, talking about both children and elderly farmers. Thursday is confined spaces in agriculture, manure pits, silos, grain bins. And Friday is how we report ag injuries.
And Dan Neenan of NECAS wants to point out the difference between the words accident and incident.
The word accident, you know, most people have the connotation that nothing could have been done to stop it from happening. So we want to use the term with the media, preventable incident, because there generally were things that could have been done to prevent that from happening.
Be careful out there, please. On the food calendar, it's National Cinnamon Raisin Bread Day and National Guacamole Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
If you happen to be in Decatur tomorrow morning, there is a really cool series going on. It is the Women Makers Series, hosted by the Illinois Manufacturers Association. There's a fireside chat going on and some real cool conversations about the future electrification of what we're doing here in the state. One of the leaders of that conversation will be Kara Demergen Huss, who is from TCCI Manufacturing. Kara, thanks for jumping back on with us at WGN.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm really excited about tomorrow.
Yeah, it's a busy morning that you guys have. What's the overall point of what you're doing?
Sure. Well, the Illinois Manufacturers Association, which is the leading association in Illinois that supports programs and policies for manufacturers, you know, we employ over 592,000 men and women in Illinois in the manufacturing industry and produce $304 billion in economic output. So a significant impact that we're having. And tomorrow's really focused around the power of being a woman maker and really hearing from visionary women leaders that are driving innovation and growth, not only in the clean energy industry, but also in our bioeconomy. So I'm really looking forward to a series of different things, including a fireside chat. Director Kristen Richards from the Department of Commerce and I will be really centered around career pathways in manufacturing, how government and industry are working together to really position manufacturing and careers, particularly for women in our areas of focus and the future that we have in the clean energy and bioeconomy.
How are we doing in Illinois in those two economies?
You know, I think it's pretty evident that Governor Pritzker has a keen vision across biotech, biomanufacturing, and bioprocessing, as well as we think about the whole bio economy. We also are very focused in clean energy as a vision and bringing new business and working on the ecosystem right here in Illinois in our clean energy sector. And then our third area really around quantum and microelectronics. And so I think never before have we seen such a dedicated focus to this vision that, you know, the cross-cutting theme across all of those is workforce development and making sure that we have the programs and policies in place to be able to serve that industry and the growth that needs to happen for in, at least in my case, in the green economy, where TCCI is very focused. So,
can the green economy be not only green in what you guys produce and helping to make it more green what is outputted, but also green in terms of the money you're brought in? I mean, that has to be one huge part of this equation, too.
Yeah, you know, I think we're really focused on, you know, innovating in our sector. So when we think about the green economy, we think about it from the aspect of U.S. manufacturing and in our case, component manufacturing and being a key source to increase the USMCA content for our big OEM commercial suppliers. We talk about it and think about it in the way of research and technology advancements. You know, with our climatic center and all of the types of jobs and an industry that needs to transform in order for electrification to be successful. And then we think of it in terms of, from our research and technology all the way into workforce development and our partnerships with the educational institutions, our community colleges and our high schools across that. So the green economy extends to this huge ecosystem, and we're all responsible for making sure this comes to fruition in a successful manner for everyone.
Tomorrow it's called The Power of Being a Woman Maker. What is the power? What can you give us a little bit on that?
We are all responsible for ensuring that, you know, there's so many changes in manufacturing happening right now and seeing a growth and making sure that the young women of tomorrow are inspired by our industries. You know, tomorrow you're going to be hearing about it from the EV side of the world, the EV revolution. We'll have individuals there, you know, joining myself, Lisa Clement-Stott, our state director for electric mobility and innovation, will be leading the conversation. But we'll have people, we'll have Mara Freeman from Rivian there. We'll have Jessica Ashley Garman from the Will Group, a DBE, an MBE, and really leading the women in the lighting and infrastructure for Illinois. And we'll have Sierra Bocheric from the Bank of America joining us, thinking about it from a whole different lens. And we'll be joined by the biotech leaders. The women in science that are making a global impact is incredible. And those individuals are right here in Central Illinois. We'll be joined by Beth Connerty, the Regional Innovation Officer from the Illinois Fermentation and Ag Bio Manufacturing Center, and Laura Appenlunzer, who runs the U of I's Research Park. I mean, these women are making waves and changes that are going to have a global impact for us for tomorrow. And so those are two really keen areas of focus for us.
Got about 30 seconds left, Kara. Our investments in making sure more young girls get interested in STEM education, have those started to pay off?
They really have, and we're actually going to be joined by several high school students throughout our region that will be coming to join us tomorrow. We have a sold-out crowd tomorrow that'll be immersed inside of our manufacturing facility in the new EV Innovation Hub, so they'll get an inside peek at where their future could lie in electrification. And so, yeah, we are really excited about the change that's happening and the excitement with the next generation of students, especially in women in our industry.
Kara Demergen-Huss from TCCI Manufacturing. Have fun tomorrow. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.